From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Republican-dominated Senate on Monday voted to extend a number of federal surveillance programs for 77 days, programs that had expired on Sunday. Rather than vote on a bill that would alter the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and extend the 2015 USA Freedom Act, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell chose a blanket 77-day extension of existing programs. Nearly 20 years ago, in the wake of the September 11, 2001 attacks, Congress overwhelmingly passed the USA Patriot Act, enacting broad surveillance powers over Americans. Now, with the COVID-19 pandemic spreading around the world, will lawmakers once more push through sweeping surveillance powers while we remain distracted by the slow-moving disaster? My guest is Sandra Fulton, Government Relations Director with the Free Press Action Fund. Welcome to the program, Sandra.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first, what were the programs that should have expired, that almost expired, that McConnell extended by 77 days?
That's right. So that is Section 215 of the Patriot Act that you mentioned earlier. So Section 215 is a surveillance authority that allows the government to collect millions of records on Americans or people in America's personal information. So this is financial information, internet search history, call records. Actually, part of Section 215, a large part of it, is called the Call Detail Records Program, which was actually one of the earliest revelations of whistleblower Edward Snowden, and then actually showed that the NSA was collecting the metadata on every single phone call through every major US telecom company. And that's actually what really sparked the kind of most recent conversation about reining in surveillance, particularly post 9/11.
So these provisions had been reauthorized repeatedly since 2001?
That's right. Well, they've been reauthorized once in a major form called the USA Freedom Act that passed 4 years ago. And that's what's sunsetting right now. So yes, yeah, so they were authorized then, and we were meant to have a debate about that today. And the bill that, but since then, we've really kind of seen just steady kind of losing in the surveillance space. Like, we're not getting like significant reining in of NSA spying by any means. And actually, this bill that was on the floor represented another weak reform bill. So while, yes, the extension went through for 77 days, the bill they were trying to pass was actually a weak bill that wasn't going to put in any protections.
Right. So ahead of the USA Freedom Act, which is basically Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act, ahead of that expiring, the House, which is dominated by Democrats, passed their reform of the bill. They're the ones that are supposed to be the liberal party. You would have expected that they would take privacy incursions, privacy issues, surveillance issues seriously. They put together an act that was supposed to be a reform, and it also addressed concerns about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that the Trump administration had fixated on because of revelations made around the special counsel's report. So specifically, what sort of reforms, what sort of improvement did the Democrats offer?
That's a really good point. It was actually an incredibly weak reform. It was mostly codifying the practices of the agencies and not much else, except for, as you mentioned, that there was kind of a provision that was drafted and narrowly tailored to go after, to accommodate the Republicans who wanted to do something about the Carter Page Trump staffer who was spied on. That is problematic. But it was interesting that those provision was even drafted to protect the rights of someone who was working for a campaign or a public official in their First Amendment rights, but it wasn't extended to the rest of the folks in the United States. And that is what the leadership of the Democratic Party agreed on. And they were bringing that to the committee, and they actually found out that Representative Zoe Lofgren and Pramila Jayapal, who were trying to advocate for the privacy rights of their constituents, were going to bring forth amendments to strengthen that bill. And instead of having that conversation or even allowing for the debate, the leadership pulled the bill entirely. So, right, as you're saying, we're talking about Chairman Adam Schiff and Speaker Pelosi, who were two of the people that were leading the resistance, and you know, just arguing for Trump to be impeached. The House did impeach Donald Trump for an abuse of power, yet they're going to hand him the Patriot Act. It makes no sense.
Right, because of course, when you have such laws in place, combined with a president who clearly has no respect for law, not that George W. Bush necessarily was some high standard for the presidency, but Trump is even worse than George W. Bush. It is certainly shocking. What would have happened if the House had just refused to pass anything? Could they have simply allowed the USA Freedom Act, which again is a port section 215 of the Patriot Act, to expire?
They could have. They could have just let it sunset.
Because they have the power, right? The Senate could have done nothing. The Senate, dominated by Republicans, would have had no power if the House had simply allowed that act to expire.
Well, the Senate could move as well. However, it has just traditionally started in the House. But if the Senate, under Mitch McConnell, the Republicans, just wanted to do a straight, clean reauthorization of all the bill of the provisions, that would have to pass the House as well. And I don't think that a straight reauthorization of these powers could pass the House. But to your point, what you brought up earlier, do you want to touch on that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like, we have fought these powers, the Patriot Act, under every administration, under Obama. No executive should have these kind of powers. But I would argue that Donald Trump does pose a unique threat to the most vulnerable people in America. And the Democrats who just impeached him should have been making that argument and trying to rein in those powers right now. We've seen leak after leak from this administration, from this FBI, how they're targeting protesters, how they're targeting Black Lives Matter protesters, how they're targeting folks at the border who are protesting against Trump's inhumane policies there. And nothing is being done about these leaks. So it's clear who the Trump administration is trying to surveil.
What about the Republicans who consider themselves libertarians? Because the opposition to the broad surveillance powers of the government had been somewhat bipartisan, with some Republicans also feeling that the government had gone too far.
That's true. And that wing still does exist, but it's kind of split. So what saved this? So it passed the House, as you said. It passed the House with massive bipartisan opposition. Over 133 members voted against the bill in the House. That's a lot for a surveillance bill. You know, folks don't, new members, like, we tried to engage a lot of the new left. The squad all voted against the budget when the Patriot Act was pulled into that. We try to engage new voices who actually represent who is being spied upon by the Trump administration. So it gets a little split, and we do still have some folks on the right, like Representative Amash, who is a strong and principled libertarian. But after it passed the House, it moved to the Senate, and it was actually Senator Mike Lee who took to the floor, gave a long speech saying, listen, I understand the importance of a lot of these powers, but it is not right that we are not even allowed to debate their merits. So it was actually Senator Mike Lee, who was a Republican, who helped to stall this in a significant way at the Senate level. So
what about Rand Paul? Rand Paul fancies himself in the Senate as the Senate's leading libertarian.
It does indeed. Rand Paul, you know, I can't always explain Rand Paul's approach. He does, but I agree with what you're saying. He does consider himself a leading libertarian. From what I understand, Rand Paul was not. What a lot of the folks were doing right now is they weren't necessarily trying to go for sunset. They wanted a conversation about protections that were necessary, protections for the First Amendment, like language around notice to defendants when information is taken from these national security powers and put in their criminal case. Like, so big, robust protections like that, but they were willing to reauthorize as long as there were protections in place. From what I understand, Rand Paul has moved to a position where he will not agree with any reauthorization. And that is why he was not particularly active this time.
So this 77-day extension basically means that for 2 months and change, the USA Freedom Act, the 2015 Act, will remain in place, which I imagine is going to be time that the Senate will use to try to do what exactly? Reauthorize the act as it is, or pass the reform bill from the House, or add amendments so that the House bill is even weaker? I mean, what exactly is their plan as far as you know?
All of those are on the table. Mm. Yeah, exactly. We have the 77 weeks. I think they were
77 weeks or days?
I'm sorry, 77 days. Sorry. Okay. 77 days. I mean, but it's ridiculous. Like, Congress has had nearly 5 years. They knew this was coming. Like, that's such a huge part of this. Like, they knew this was coming. They just, the lead, and really is leadership stopping folks, new voices from engaging and fighting for better reforms. Like, they knew this was coming, but they take it down to the last minute again, as I kind of mentioned earlier, and this was actually supposed to sunset in December, but because no one could decide on language, it was pulled into the budget with a 90-day reauthorization. So that's what we were up against just this past last week. So the March 15th was the new sunset after it was pulled into the budget. And yeah, so now we have this additional time. And the agreed upon deal is that there will be 3 amendments allowed on either side. So we'll see 3 privacy strengthening amendments, and then we'll see whatever kind of the McConnell branch wants to do. McConnell did endorse the House bill as soon as it passed the House, which is new for him. McConnell's general position is straight reauthorization, no reform. So it a little bit speaks to McConnell having to move towards reform, and it a little bit speaks to the fact that the base bill out of the House was so weak.
Do you think he reauthorized it because he's so busy, you know, keeping his lips attached to Donald Trump's behind? Sorry to put it so coarsely, but the FISA Act reform was basically what he might have wanted to show the president that he was favoring?
I mean, honestly, the president has gone back and forth on whether he's going to sign this. It's kind of just whatever day you catch him, like where his attention is. You know, sometimes he's offended that his campaign was spied on. So he's like, no, I'm going to veto anything. And then sometimes he's Mr. like tough on crime. You never know with this president what you're going to get. It's entirely inconsistent. So if McConnell wants to judge that, like, you know, good luck to him. But I think what we're going to see is we're going to see amendments trying to strengthen this bill. And then on the other side, I think exactly that we are going to see. I think we could possibly see an amendment on straight reauthorization with no reform. I think we will likely try to see them get the House bill back on track, which is what they tried to streamline before. But again, they had to pull, what they had to do on Monday was they had to pull the bill because they weren't going to be able to get the votes they needed on cloture. Cloture just means basically, we're now going to pick up the bill. We're now going to debate the bill. And it's kind of this thing to see if you're going to get filibustered. So they weren't able to get the votes to proceed. So I don't know why and that's because really the public interest community really rallied. We've been advocating for a long time on reforms that we'd kind of all coalesced around. But it was really like in the past week, once we saw how bad the House bill was, how they tried to inappropriately rush it through the House without allowing the Judiciary Committee, who, as you also kind of referenced earlier, are tasked with protecting the constitutional rights of Americans. The Judiciary Committee was entirely bypassed because they wanted it stronger. So, you know, the public interest community has really come aground. So we are just going to have to work really hard in the next 77 days to see what we can do with that window that we've been given.
Now, Sandra, the new reality that we're all facing right now with the coronavirus spread is pushing us to rely even more heavily on digital communication, right? I mean, it feels as though all of those in-person meetings that are now transitioning to online, all of the interactions that we've had with one another that are being forced to go online. And it's great because there is that technology that's available, the technology that's enabling you and I to talk to one another right now, is also, unfortunately, vulnerable to surveillance, right?
Absolutely. One of the reforms that we were pushing for very strongly was a warrant protection for your internet search history and browse history and other things like that that you're doing online. Because you're right, it is vulnerable. It is great that we have this way that we can communicate, we can organize together online, we can take care of our communities, we can build networks in times of crisis like this. But yes, you're absolutely right. Like law enforcement can access that. I mean, that's one of the reasons it's so important to defend encryption in times like this, to use encryption, to normalize encryption, encrypted apps and other things so that it doesn't, law enforcement doesn't see somebody using encryption and assuming that is a sign of criminal activity.
So, are there parts of the USA Freedom Act, which has now been extended by 77 days, that directly that are directly relevant to this new reality, to the live video chats, etc.?
Yes, and then I think it is susceptible. It is vulnerable to government surveillance without reforms in place. It's a little unclear. These programs are all purposefully very secretive, and transparency and reporting are always things that we are advocating for to see exactly what they're using these programs for. But it is not clear. I mean, the call detail record program that I referenced earlier, we were trying, that was meant to be reined in. When Snowden first exposed it, they were collecting everything. It was called bulk collection. After that, they passed the original USA Freedom Bill that was supposed to rein in that collection. So it wasn't this bulk collection. We then found out that in 2018, the CDR program had collected 434 million records on just 11 targets. So that is how broad and sweeping and like what a dragnet these programs tend that they can be. So yes, it's incredibly important right now.
And this is such an important lesson for Americans that once governments get such powers, they are extremely resistant to giving up the power over surveillance. The history has shown this over and over again. It takes an enormous push, enormous amounts of sustained resistance to force a government to give up the powers that it has grabbed. And those of us who backed the USA Patriot Act, and when I say those of us, I really mean lawmakers, because there wasn't much support in among the population that was reeling from the terrorist attacks. This was something that Congress passed. There was even, I remember, members of Congress who admitted later that they hadn't even read the act that they ended up passing. And such a key lesson for us as Americans that once we give up these rights to government, getting them back is extremely difficult, even if those rights that we've given up are clearly, an infringement on the Constitution, right?
Put it better myself. That's right. I mean, we need to be so careful to not let them take advantage of a crisis to put in place highly invasive surveillance practices that we don't know will keep us safe. They don't need to be in the hands of law enforcement. And as you said, it will be so difficult to ever get those protections back. And they will also undoubtedly be abused by law enforcement. That's, so much part of like, who is law enforcement targeting? Generally, they are targeting communities of color. They are targeting activists. And like this administration has just been the poster child of targeting anyone who disagrees with them. So we know these powers, it will be incredibly difficult to rein them in again if we give them up, and we know who they will be used to target.
And of course, these are also, this is also a government that is currently not just dominated by one party. I mean, the Republicans are in control of the White House and the Senate. The Democrats are in control of the House. And I think that's such an important thing to keep reiterating, that the so-called Liberal Party has been the one allowing this to happen, pushing through the continued surveillance. Technology has changed since September 11th, of course. And even as it's gotten easier for us to communicate with one another, I imagine imagine it's also gotten easier for the government to keep tabs on one another as well, on us rather, as well, right? I mean, this is unfortunately a moment when sophistication of the surveillance has probably gotten better. We're also at a time when Americans are deploying such things as, you know, cameras on our own front doorsteps under the guise of our own personal security, not realizing that those can be hacked. And it really, I think this new coronavirus era ought to remind us that that we give up our power, we give up our rights at our own peril.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think the idea that surveillance is safety is an incredibly troubling narrative that we have been trying to push back on as a community. And, you know, particularly for communities of color and vulnerable communities, surveillance is not safety. And when you have folks putting up cameras on their front door that is so often, you know, tied to a contract with law enforcement, like, that is incredibly problematic and incredibly dangerous for certain communities specifically. And we need to be thinking about that. And it's also pushing these kind of, you know, really problematic racist narratives on these community listservs that people are like looking, you know, because people will give up like all of their privacy in their front yard because someone has taken a package of theirs. They'll trade that for like a police state. And I just think we really need to consider like, what is the trade-off when you are putting these things on your front door particularly? But yeah, and again, as you said, like as more and more of our lives move online, it is fantastic that we can communicate and we can organize, particularly at a time like this, when we do need to build networks to protect one another. Like that is really important. But our privacy walls have fallen far short. And, you know, as you said before, yes, like it is the Democrats in power. It is Speaker Pelosi who was instrumental in stopping us from getting strong reforms here. Because it is also like, it is a problem that Democrats feel like they need to be tough on crime. It is hard for Democrats to come out and try to rein in law enforcement. I often argue to them, like, law enforcement is not a neutral actor, and you need to stop treating them like they are one. We have seen throughout American history who law enforcement has targeted. But the Democrats won't have that conversation. They're just scared of looking like they're weak on terrorism.
Right. So finally, Sandra, what should people do? It's not like we can organize a march these days and go out and protest in person. Are you recommending that people contact their members of Congress? Because although Mitch McConnell has bought himself 77 days of an extension, that is 77 extra days to organize, right?
Yeah, exactly. It is 77 days for us to organize and for them to organize. So I do hope that people follow it. And I know that it's hard. Like they're, you know, they did this like partially during the coronavirus, and we're just trying to hope that they could sneak it through because people were rightfully distracted and worried about their health and the health of people they love. So I understand that there's a lot of noise, but I do think that this is important. As you said earlier, you know, once these surveillance authorities are out there, it is very difficult to rein them in. So I'm just asking people to pay attention. You know, a lot of public interest groups are following this other than, you know, Free Press, Demand Progress, ACLU, like they're all on top of this, but please do pay attention and reach out to your members of Congress and tell them now that you want strong reforms, that you want privacy protections. Like, the Patriot Act didn't age well, you know, like just kind of just call it out.
Give out a website for Free Press.
Yes, it's Free Press, www.freepress.net.
I will post a link to that from our website later as well, where people can find resources, and we'll also link to the article that you wrote about the extension of the USA Freedom Act. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.
You too. My guest has been Sandra Fulton, Government Relations Director with the Free Press Action Fund. We've been discussing the broad surveillance powers that Congress is attempting to keep in their hands. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.